Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
This is Money Talking from WNYC. I'm Charlie Herman. The president came out swinging this week with a bold plan for the future of the internet. The concept, and I'm going to try and use this phrase as little as possible, is known as net neutrality. And it means that the cable and phone companies that bring the internet to you have to treat all data the same. They can't decide for you how fast or how slow Netflix comes to your home compared to, say, another site. Tim Wu is a law professor at Columbia University, and he's not only an advocate for it, he's the guy who coined the term net neutrality. He says this is about a much bigger issue.
Ultimately, it is really about an age-old issue, which is we have some companies that provide essential services like electricity, like water. They're private companies, but we want them to behave in special ways because we completely depend on them. So internet carriers have, in my opinion, come into that situation where the whole economy is dependent on them. And so we face the age-old question of what duties do they then owe to the public.
And this is where the president is coming down on the issue. He wants the companies that provide internet service to be treated more or less like a utility. And he wants the Federal Communications Commission, the FCC, to do this through what's called Title II, part of an 80-year-old law that could also give the government the power to set rates.
The cable and telephone companies don't like being regulated. They don't want the main authority, Title II, being used. They're afraid of it. Recently, I saw AT&T is announcing it's not going to invest anything at all because of Title II. They're afraid of it.
If the president's proposals went through, how would that change broadband internet service?
It wouldn't change it at all. Everything would feel exactly the same. I mean, what we're doing with net neutrality here is restoring a rule. So the background is the rule was struck down in January by a court. And so this is all about an effort to put back a rule. Now, there being no rule right now, the carriers would love to keep it as no rule. Then we can start doing these kind of slow lane programs where, hey, unless you want to be stuck in the slow lane, you got to pay us more money. And they want to mess around with stuff and try various schemes to make more money. If the president passes rules, nothing changes at all.
And so if the president's proposal doesn't succeed, what would happen?
I suspect you will start to see slow lane schemes coming into effect.
What does that mean, slow lane
schemes? So what I mean by that is that the cable companies, they've already sort of been doing this, and the phone companies go around to all the internet companies and say
– the Googles and Amazons of the world.
Googles, Tumblr, but also Wikipedia and so forth, and they're like – and they'll say to them, do you want, you know, priority access? You know, it's like on the airplane. Do you want elite status to board first? If you do, you should pay us. Otherwise, you're going to be caught in the cattle run with everybody else. And so what I think consumers will start to notice is a lot of the nonprofit blogs, so forth, will start to get a lot slower. And the companies that are already work the best, Google and Netflix and so on, will actually even get even better. And so I think you'll see increasing inequality on the internet, which is my concern as an academic. I think we have enormous inequality problems as there are, and I think a lack of net neutrality rules leads to even further division between the haves and have-not online.
What would the consumer experience be like if net neutrality rules were not maintained?
I just think there'll be everything like Netflix, whatever, get a lot more expensive. Everything will have even more ads than they have now. And the nonprofits, the blogs, they just will not perform well. And you'll see fewer of them.
Do you think the president's comments changed the discussion at all?
Absolutely. I think they hit the reset button. Everyone in Washington is scrambling to figure out where they are right now. You know, the president's the president.
Tim, thank you very much.
It's been a pleasure.
Tim Wu is a professor at Columbia Law School. Both sides in the net neutrality debate claim that if their side doesn't win, innovation will suffer. And there is some truth and some fear-mongering behind those arguments. But one thing both sides agree on, the future belongs to those who can innovate. But to do that, you have to have a sense of what the future will look like. And to help find those answers, more companies are turning to social scientists like Genevieve Bell. She's the director of user experience research at Intel, and she's an anthropologist. Her job is not to think about how powerful microprocessors can be. Her job is to imagine all the places where a microprocessor might show up and then help Intel build the map to take them there.
I think one of the challenges for big companies, in fact for most companies, and it's Intel's challenge too, is how do you keep refreshing your imagination so that you find and pay attention to the things that don't look like the future you imagine, right? So how do you maintain curiosity at a company level, and how do you not get trapped by your own past to miss things? And I think that's hard, right? You know, we've certainly had our misses at Intel, and I think, you know, we find ourselves in the process now of thinking about how do we pay attention to the Internet of Things, to wearable computing, to mobile devices, and really starting to imagine that we're not a computing we're a computer company, we're a computing company. And starting to say, listen, if it's smart and connected, it should be, you know, running on us, is a very different way of thinking about what we do. And I think, you know, part of the thing that is hard to do is to keep constantly reinventing yourselves, right? And, you know, that's hard work.
How do you do that? I mean, how do you foster creativity in a company, whether it's a couple people or whether it's a many thousands of people? Is there a secret sauce to do that?
That's a good question. I think one of the things about fostering creativity is you've got to know where you want to have it. So I think it's never a matter of just saying, go be creative. Part of it's about, you know, what are the problems you need to solve? How do you make sure you're paying attention to the things you don't know how to anticipate, which in some ways is a very hard thing? And how do you make sure you have a culture that's not necessarily about fostering creativity, but it's about fostering hard questions? So, you know, how do you make sure that you have people that will ask, why aren't we doing this? Have you seen this thing? Why are we doing that thing? And it's not just about how do you let people play, but it's also about how do you create a culture of rigor that makes hard questions okay.
Is there a hard question you're asking yourself right now?
I think, you know, one of the questions I'm asking myself is how much technology is going to be enough? You know, how much stuff do people want in their lives? And conversely, where is our willingness to share information? What will be the nature of privacy? What does it mean to think about security? Those, I mean, I think are going to be the fascinating questions over the next 10 years. So me, I worry about those things, but I also get to sort of contemplate them too.
Genevieve Bell, Intel's on-call anthropologist, says a key to answering these questions is to stay curious. But it's not always that easy.
Sometimes the hardest thing about being curious is it means you have to acknowledge you don't know something. And I think as we get older, as we get established in our professions, even as we are establishing ourselves in our professions, it's really hard to ask questions like why, because you're afraid you might look foolish. And I think there's something really powerful in one's willingness to still be able to look foolish.
You can listen to my full conversation with Bell as a separate podcast on iTunes or by going to our website, moneytalking.org. Thanks so much for listening. I'm Charlie Herman, and this is Money Talking from WNYC.